Good evening.
Good evening.
We're about a minute early, but we'll go ahead and pull the trigger, shall we? All right. Let's open with a word of prayer. Father, thank you for tonight. Thank you for the privilege of salvation through faith because of what your Son's done for us, Lord. Thank you for the opportunity to come together and allow your Spirit to teach us through your Word as well as through your creation, Lord. Thank you for just the abundant evidence that you have very planfully, strategically placed throughout the entire universe, in our solar system, on our earth, Lord, that all points to you. Thank you for that. Again, just ask your blessing upon our time tonight as we look at your creation through the our own solar system. Just pray that you would be honored by the things that we talk about, that we would be blessed by it. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. All right. Well, we've been looking at our solar system. That's kind of what we started last week. And I won't do near as much review today as I did the past couple of weeks, but just briefly, I've got the solar nebula theory posted up here. Of course, this is an artist's rendition of what they theorize happened as far as our solar system being constructed. But the solar nebula theory is the most common answer in the world as to how our solar system came to be, or any solar system for that matter. And it states that once a star is formed out of nebulous gas, more nebulous gases and dust begin to spin around the star. And as time progresses, the dust clumps together. The dust clumps into rocks. The rocks clump into asteroids. The asteroids clump into planets. Some of these clumps then become moons or even stay asteroids. Some of the elements become comets or other heavenly bodies. And in our solar system, they say, took about 4.6, somewhere in there, billion years to form through a process of evolution. Now, again, in weeks past, we looked at a number of ways that this theory actually disproves itself. And last week, we began looking at some planetary ways that the solar nebula model disproves itself. But just by way of review, how does Mercury disprove the solar nebula theory? Do you remember? Oops. There's Mercury right there. All right, yeah, it's too dense for the solar for how they say the solar system came together. Anything else that was strange about Mercury? What's that? Yeah, it has a magnetic field, and the reason that's weird, or they say that's weird, is that they believe that in order for a planet or any object for that matter to have a magnetic field, it needs to have a core that is probably liquid, something that is at least mobile to generate that current or whatever is needed for a magnetic field. Well, Mercury, they say, how did they say Mercury became so dense? An asteroid hit it. Basically knocking all of the loose stuff off and leaving just the solid core. But really, you and I both know that doesn't explain why it's still too dense, okay? So Mercury actually defies their own theory. How does Venus disprove the solar nebula theory? You remember? All right, yeah, it's actually, I think the way I put it initially was it's too different, okay? But beings being what they would call young, There's Venus right there. Because of its position in the solar system, because of how close it is to Earth, they theorized, this before they ever sent any kind of probe there, they theorized that it should be almost identical to the Earth. It should be made of the same stuff. It's rather close to the same size. As they got there, they found that it is absolutely nothing like Earth. In fact, it's absolutely nothing like any other planet in the entire solar system. The entire outer surface of Venus is a completely solid, hardened lava flow. In fact, the way they put it, by their own theory, they say that Venus is very, very young. And they have no idea why, because it was all supposed to be forming at the same time. Now, obviously, they will tell you that there are some planets that are older or younger than others, but this one, Venus, looks, in their eyes, very young, like a brand new planet. They said that Venus used to have a moon. What do they theorize happened to that moon?
Asteroid.
An asteroid hit it. Okay. Remember that line. It's going to come in handy. Okay. How does Earth disprove the solar nebula theory? An asteroid hit it. What was the probably I spent most of our time last week talking about concerning Earth?
Water.
Lots and lots and lots of water. What was that? Has tectonic plates that move around, and it's believed that Mars does too. But nonetheless, our planet is just far too perfect. It really is. The main thing that the solar nebula theory cannot explain is the water. How much water we actually have. Its abundance and even its type. I mentioned a lot of the ice that they find out on other planets in space. Most of that is CO2, carbon dioxide. But even a lot of the water, and we'll use that word because it contains hydrogen and oxygen, is what is called heavy hydrogen water, and I can't remember what the name was. They had a technical name for it. I used it last week, but I've lost it. All right. Lots and lots of water. Turn, if you will. Let's go ahead and read a passage from Genesis chapter 1 again. Just to gain a proper perspective of how this all came to be. Genesis chapter 1, verses 14 through 19. It says, "Then God said, 'Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth.' And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the fourth day." The next object that we're going to look at in our solar system is the moon. And from that passage we just read, God is referring to the moon as the light that comes out at night, okay? Our moon is perfectly made for us. What are some ways that the moon influences the Earth? All right, tides is a huge one. What other ways? The passage talked about a few. Okay, and an eclipse. We're actually going to talk about an eclipse as we move on here. It does. In fact, on a cold October evening, when you're out in the mountains, it's not like daylight, but it can be very bright out. What else? Times, seasons, right? Okay. All right. Let's go back to tides for a minute. Tides is one of the main ways the moon does influence the Earth, at least that we are aware of. There may be other things that the moon does that we don't even know it does yet, all right? But if we had no moon, there would be no tides, at least not like what we see today. The sun actually does affect our tides a little bit, but not like what the moon does. Tides not only keep the oceans from going stagnant and dying, but tides and waves actually generate oxygen. Oxygen in the oceans, oxygen in the air, and I think I shared this with a few weeks ago, but the ocean actually generates 2/3 of the oxygen that we have on this planet. But here are a few other things to consider. The moon's distance from the Earth is just right. Now, there could be a fairly big margin, all right? The moon could be 50,000 miles further, 50,000 miles closer, and I think it would still sustain the tides and life in the oceans. But another 50,000 miles, if the moon were 100,000 miles closer, the tides would be so extreme that coastal cities, especially near the north and south poles or southern hemispheres, could not even exist. If it were 100,000 miles further, tides would be so minimal that the life in the oceans would die. Also, just a point of interest concerning its distance. Of the 193 moons that are in our solar system, ours is the only one that produces a perfect eclipse of the sun. There's not another planet with another moon that, if the proportion of the moon to the sun to the planet, creates a perfect eclipse. And it is practically perfect. Practically perfect. And vice versa, when the Earth goes and covers the moon. Okay, so it is just the right distance from the Earth. So if not placed there by God, I mean, we look at this moon that we have, we see what it does for us on the Earth, and again, there may even be some things about the moon that it does to the Earth that we don't even know. We don't even know yet. But here it is. And it's screaming, God placed me here. It is just too perfect. It fits for us just perfect. Well, according to the solar nebula theory, if it was not placed there by God, how do scientists explain where our moon came from? How did it get there? What do you think?
An asteroid
hit. There's actually about a half a dozen theories as to how the moon got there. I'm going to give you a couple of them, and really because they are all pretty much developed from this solar nebula theory, or at least connected to it to a degree. But I want to just show you how even the theories about our moon disprove the theories that they're proposing about the origin of our solar system. The first one is the fission theory, which states that billions of years ago, the Earth was spinning so fast that a chunk came off of it and became the moon. Now, this actually creates more problems than solutions. First, the Earth would have to be spinning at an incredible rate of speed, many, many times faster than it is now. And then if you take Newton's third law of motion into consideration with the centrifugal force, have you ever used a David and Goliath sling? Okay, you've seen one. All right, and you spin it faster and faster. When you finally let that rock or that marble go, it doesn't take off in orbit, does it? Okay, and now obviously things in space are different with gravitational pulls, but still, if something is spinning that fast enough to have a chunk of it come off, it's going to be moving at the speed of which it was spinning, and then it's going to take off in an exact tangent, right? Pretty much a straight line right off. So the fission theory, it cannot work at all, okay? It'd come off in a straight line. It wouldn't take up orbit, and I think even scientists realize today that that is a silly theory. Plus, the moon is not made of the same materials as the Earth. Anybody, you ever owned a moon rock? Anybody here ever owned a moon rock or saw a moon rock? Okay. It's precious because it's not like what we have. The moon is made of different materials than Earth, so it couldn't have been part of it at one time. The fission theory can't work. Next is the nebula theory, which claims that just like a planet is formed from a cloud of dust and gas, the moon was at the same time formed from the same material. Well, again, the moon isn't made of the same material. So the nebula theory can't work. Then there's the capture theory. The capture theory claims that the moon was just a mass, pretty much just like you see it right now, that was wandering aimlessly through our solar system and got captured by the Earth's gravitational force and began to orbit Earth. Well, just like Newton's third law of motion disproves the fission theory, it also disproves this one as well. While the Earth could draw a mass into its orbit, I mean, we do that all the time with satellites, right? The moon would have had to been moving incredibly slowly, and then enter at just the perfect angle, or else it would have been ejected again at some point and off on a tangent, just like the rock and the sling again. Most scientists therefore reject any of these three theories, but have come up with a fourth. Any guesses? The asteroid, right? Remember? You already mentioned it. Yeah, the asteroid. An asteroid hit Earth. They claim one about the size of Mars. And even today, that's the story that they're sticking to. But it still can't explain why the moon is made up of different material than the Earth. And for this theory, they believe that little or none of the moon is made up. In their own theory, they claim that little or none of it is made up of the asteroid they claim that hit the Earth. So, again, it fails because the moon isn't made of the same material as what we have. However, again, that is the theory that they hold on to. Tyler.
Have they ever aged moon rocks? No.
I don't. Probably. They've probably run. It would have to have some kind of radioactive isotope in order for them to measure any kind of age. So I don't know if they have or haven't. But in 2 weeks, hold on to your brains, because mine about exploded as I learned about radiometric dating, okay? So I'm gonna dump everything I learned on you. You will be radiometric dating experts in 2 weeks, okay? But we'll talk about that a little bit. There is one more theory, and there are some that kind of cling to this one as well. In fact, it's the only one that could possibly explain why the moon is made of different material than the earth. And it is the stolen moon theory, okay? Which not only answers the question as to where Venus's moon might have gone, follow me here, but where ours came from. They said that possibly Venus had a moon, and instead of an asteroid hitting it and completely destroying it, that it had wandered so far away from Venus, and on one of our orbits, we came close enough to Venus that we stole it. Yeah, way to go. We'll believe anything, anything at all except what God says. We'll even defy the very laws of nature we claim to abide by to explain a story. And we, I mean the science community, not you and I. I hope you and I are on the same page as far as just listening to what God says and taking it as literal and at face value. But the world looks at these things and they'll believe anything at all except for what God says. And then there is the age of the moon. And while I don't know if they've tried to date any rocks or anything like that, all of these man-made theories that I've just listed here, they all start with very long ages, billions and billions of years. That is their imagined constant, really. That is a must for any of their theories to even be imaginable, believable. But it's the wrong constant. Time can't be a constant. It doesn't work. The evidence is not there. Just out of curiosity, what did I say was an indicator of a young planet? What did they say is an indicator of a young planet? What was that? Temperature, volcanic activity, recent volcanic activity, okay? Venus kind of rocks their world because to them it looks like it's very, very young. But with the moon, with all of these theories, it has to be for at least 4.5 billion years old, at least formed within the same time as solar system. Has anyone here ever heard of a volcano erupting on the moon? Yes? A volcano erupting on the moon? All right. And here, this kind of goes hand in hand with kind of where we started with a lot of these things. I kind of started this astronomy series giving you a list of things that the science world doesn't tell you. What would you say if I told you that there were 579 recorded volcanic events on the moon since we've been observing it? Wow, I didn't know that. But there have. There have been 579 recorded volcanic events. And that goes to show you that by their own theory again, the moon can't be old. It can't be old. Now, I personally don't believe that volcanic activity is an indicator of young or old. I think it's all young. All right, but by their theory, I'm using their information to disprove their theory. They think that the mold is moon. All right, the moon is old. But 579 volcanic events. Here's one other thing. You may have heard this. Have you heard of the LLR experiment? The LLR experiments is, even before we sent people to the moon, scientists theorized that the moon was actually slowly but surely moving further and further away from us. Because the moon's orbit around the Earth is elliptical, it's not a perfect circle, and our gravity continues to have an effect on the moon, that they theorize that the moon is actually very slowly moving further and further away from Earth. So when they actually sent people to the moon, in a number of strategic locations on the moon, astronauts set up reflective plates. This is that LLR experiment. And they set it up on strategic places on the side of the moon that we could see. And since they did that over the course of time, we have been able to shoot laser beams at those reflective plates and calculate the precise distance of the moon from the Earth. And since that point in time, they have discovered that the moon is moving about an inch and a half further from Earth every single year. All right? Now, that doesn't seem like a lot. But when you start plugging in billions of years into that equation, all right, it only takes... Where's the number I had here? You only have to go back in time 1.5 billion years, and the moon is scraping the surface of the Earth. Does that make sense? Okay, at that, if that inch and a half rate is constant, you only have to go back 1.5 billion years. They say it's 4.5 billion years old. You only have to go back a billion and a half years, and the moon is scraping the surface of the Earth. So again, it's just another one of those evidences that show us it can't be that old. Not as old as they are saying it is. All right. We're going to move on to Mars. But any questions or thoughts on the moon? You know, I think that's the best theory so far, other than the creation one. Yeah. From Wisconsin, right? All right. And anything else on the moon? All right. Let's take a look at Mars. Isn't that pretty? That is a pretty, pretty planet. I'm sure it's kind of color enhanced. But nonetheless, it is a very, very pretty planet. Mars is a very rocky and desert planet. It has been really the central focus of the space program for many years now. And one of the reasons is because it is close to us, all right? It's not hot like Venus. In fact, there's a lot of similarities between Mars and Earth. In fact, this next picture kind of reminds me of the Valley of Fire. It very similar. It looks like a desert terrain here on Earth. We have a scientific probe there that is there right now. That's one of the photos that it took. And probably the hottest news about Mars since we have landed the probe there, is the hopes of finding evidence of life. That probably is their number one pursuit. I will tell you, here is what they are telling you about Mars, all right? There is apparent evidence of water there, and lots of water. There is a rift canyon on Mars that is as long as the entirety of the United States. It is 7 times wider than the Grand Canyon, and it is 4 times deeper than Mount Everest is tall. It is, no, yeah, sorry, excuse me. It is four times deeper than our Grand Canyon and as deep as Mount Everest is tall. There are lots and lots of formations on Mars. A lot of formations that even appear to be formed by water. Alluvial fans. Do you know what an alluvial fan is? I actually meant to get a picture of that. Next time you go to St. George on I-15, and you right before you go into the gorge, look to the right at those mountains there in Arizona. An alluvial fan is a drainage that has come off of down through a canyon and made a great big wash of gradually sloping dirt. It looks kind of like a handheld fan just on the ground and gradually slopes. Well, they have found some of those, or some formations, I should say, that look just like alluvial fans on Mars. They have found shoreline formations. They have found water geyser formations. In fact, some scientists say that Mars at one time had great oceans of water, maybe even enough water to completely cover the entire planet. Today, water has only been found there in trace amounts. Mars has some water in its atmosphere, and it has a little bit of ice at the poles. They're not entirely sure if that ice is actual water or just CO2. But right now, while it appears that Mars had an incredible amount of water at one time, and I'm not saying it has, but there are features of the planet that make it look like it did. It only has trace amounts now and not near enough to do what they are claiming it did on the surface of Mars. So here's the question. Why is water in abundance so important for them to find? Way stations, okay, all right. Maybe a stopover, they can build a motel, right? Okay, all right, and that's it. And it's kind of like I think I mentioned this last week too, but just because there's water doesn't mean that is a far cry from life. Water is just one of many intricate things that are needed for life. They think oftentimes that water automatically means life, but again, there are lots of things that are needed for that. For one thing, a creator, okay. But that's not what they're looking for. We're going to talk a little bit more about life in general, plant life, animal life, microscopic life when we get to the topic of biology. But here's the question. If Mars had all of the water that they said it had, where did it go? What's that? Yeah, maybe we stole it too. That's right. But what's the answer I'm looking for?
Asteroid.
An asteroid hit it. All right, an asteroid hit it. You know, if it wasn't so pitiful, it would be hilarious. They say that a catastrophic giant impact asteroid hit Mars and completely changed its atmosphere, making all of the water evaporate. Oceans of water, a globe of water, all gone because of an asteroid. Now, just in kind of taking this to another level for a minute concerning Mars being completely covered with water, they believe that, all right? Does anyone see the hypocrisy in that theory? And any kind of hypocrisy? Amanda? The very theory they're using on Mars is the very same thing they're looking at us with documented evidence and saying, that's a fantasy. It's a fairy tale. It never happened. It never happened. The instant we as Christians or Jews hint at a catastrophic worldwide flood from Noah's day, we're labeled fools, believers in fairy tales. We're not allowed to use visual evidence, and we're going to get to some visual evidence that supports a worldwide flood, just like God says, but they're allowed to use the possibility of water and some features on the planet that kind of look like what water could have been there to support what they claim as a fact. Mars was completely covered in water one time. Here's a fairly recent headline, well, 2007, not terribly recent anymore. Here's the headline. Here's how it reads. Wheel of Spirit hints at life on Mars. Now, that was the headline of an article in one of the most widely accepted science magazines in the country. Wheel of Spirit. Spirit was the name is the name of a rover. In fact, I think we actually have a couple rovers there now, right? Anybody know? Okay. But Spirit was the one that was there. And the title is Wheel of Spirit, Hints at Life on Mars. Now, just take a guess, if you would. What do you suppose Spirit may have found that could hint at life on Mars? What's that, Richard? Ice? Okay. Any other?
Carbon?
Okay. Any other guesses? All right. Here's what prompted that headline. Wheel of Spirit hints at life on Mars. And I think Wheel of Spirit, and I didn't actually look into this any deeper, but I believe what it means is one of the wheels of the Spirit rover tracking through the desert of Mars. It turns something up in the dirt. And what that something was a white-looking powder. From that white-looking powder, they said, Wheel of Spirit hints at life on Mars. And here's why they say that. That white-looking powder looks a little bit similar to a form of silica that we have here on Earth. This particular form of silica, or I should say it this way, sometimes this particular silica comes up from volcanic activity. And sometimes when it comes up from volcanic activity, it contains actually some microscopic, I'll just call them microbes, that are a form of life. So here they found a white powder that may or may not be silica, that may or may not have come from volcanic activity, and their headline reads, Hints at Life on Mars. I mean, that's pushing the envelope. That's really pushing the envelope. They're grasping at this hope of life on Mars. So here is what they're not telling you. Water does not mean life. You will never read that in an article, okay, a science article, that water does not mean life. Silica does not mean life. And they don't even know if it is or not. It may or may not be. Theories on this topic are completely hypocritical. Wild speculations are passed off as facts. The Spirit rover didn't even remotely, not even remotely, hint at life on Mars. At best, it hinted at white silica that may or may not be present. Turn to Nehemiah chapter 9. And I Lord willing, next week we're going to spend quite a bit more time in God's Word. But looking at the topics we've been looking at here, I know God's Word is kind of far between, but nonetheless, I think it does, it answers our questions directly. Nehemiah chapter 9 and verse 6. And just as we're looking at all this evidence, the scientific evidence, I just want us to be reminded. It says, "You alone are the Lord. You have made heaven, the heaven of heavens, with all their host, the earth and everything on it, the seas and all that is in them, and you preserve them all. The hosts of heaven worship you." Turn to Psalm 95. That word host is sometimes translated as stars. And depending upon the context, it can refer even to angels. But oftentimes that word host is referring to heavenly bodies. We just read in Nehemiah that even they worship God. They worship God. And here we are, human beings made in God's image, looking at these heavenly bodies that worship God, and we don't, or they don't. Psalm 95, verses 4 and 5, says, "In his hand are the deep places of the earth. The heights of the hills are his also. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land." And, you know, I guess in light of even Mars and the possibility of maybe water being on Mars at one time, it's okay, because water doesn't mean life. It's okay. God made it all. He made it all. He made the seas. He made the deep places. He made the hills. He made even the dry land from his hands. No matter how many accepted scientific articles I read for the origin of the universe, the galaxies, the solar systems, go to Wikipedia someday and type in the origin of the universe, the origin of the solar system, and God creating it doesn't even come up. They will list wild amounts of theories, even theories possibly about the cow jumping over the moon, okay? But they won't list what God has stated here. It's crazy. All right, well, we've got about, what do we got, about 15 minutes here. We're going to start on Jupiter tonight. Jupiter, where'd my little clicker go? Is a beautiful planet. Just the colors, the formations. It is called a gas giant. It's actually made from very similar materials as a star would be, the gases and stuff. In fact, that red spot storm has been raging as long as man has been able to see Jupiter, probably much longer than that. But if for as long as man has been able to look through a telescope and see Jupiter, they have seen this gaseous storm that continues to rage on Jupiter. But Jupiter, here's what you need to know about Jupiter, and here is what they're not telling you. Jupiter is too big for the solar nebula model. In fact, again, like I said, it's made of a lot of the same materials that they believe stars are made of. So in a solar nebula model, the stars typically form first. Things spin around them. The planets, asteroids, everything else form according to their theory. Well, Jupiter is too big for their model. Jupiter is the largest planet in our solar system. It is, like I said, a gas giant with a very, very violent surface. But Jupiter doesn't fit the evolutionary solar nebula model of 4.6 or 4.5 billion years old. And one of the reasons why is they believe that just like stars form, stars take longer to form than solar systems, okay? Stars form first before solar systems, and because Jupiter is made of similar materials, Jupiter would have taken much, much longer than 4.6 billion years to form. Yet, here it is, part of our solar system. So according to their own theory, Jupiter would need to be almost twice as old, 9 billion years old to be what we see today. Another thing is Jupiter is made of the wrong stuff, all right? It and Saturn's makeup are that, again, of a star and not a planet. So that completely contradicts their own solar nebula theory, because what happens to all the gases when something starts spinning? When a star starts forming, what is happening to the gases around it? They're compressing. They're forming a star. So here we have this massive planet made of the same stuff. By rights, it should have become part of the star. Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune are all gas giants. They shouldn't be way out there. They should be part of the sun, according to their theory. So it's made of the wrong stuff. It's not made of what they say planets should be made of. They're made of what a star should be made of. Jupiter spins too fast. They're not going to tell you that either. If the whole solar system was formed by a huge spinning cloud of gas and dust, the materials gathering together would have a fairly uniform spin, even on their own axis. They should spin in the same direction, and they should all spin at the same speed. If I took a handful of marbles and I started spinning around really fast and I let those marbles go, now, we've already talked about Newton's third law of motion. They're actually going to take off and go that way. But let's say I let them go. Which direction would those marbles be spinning? Anybody ever thrown a football? Right? You throw the football, and the football spins in the direction that you forced it, the opposite way. Exactly. Well, even in a solar nebula theory, when you're spinning around, and let's say a planet starts forming, everything's going to pretty much be spinning the same direction, the same speed. Well, Jupiter spins really, really fast. In fact, Jupiter is spinning almost 10 times faster than any other planet in our solar system. It's just kind of doing its own thing. And by the way, while we're talking about the subject of planets spinning on their axis, Venus, all the planets are going this way. Venus is going this way. It's spinning the wrong way. And then we have Jupiter's moons. Jupiter actually has 60 moons. Well, let me talk to you about just three of them tonight. In fact, we may not get through all three. I'm going to quit here in a minute. The solar nebula model, some plants will be slightly older, some will be slightly younger, but Jupiter with its moons, by their theory, pretty much needs to be the oldest planet in the entire solar system. And therefore, its moons, if they're formed the way they say they are formed, should actually be very old too. And one of the ways that science seeks to measure the age of a planet or a moon is by the number of craters it has. All right. They believe that things that have been out in space really, really, really long time will have been impacted by more asteroids and therefore will have more craters. Well, if Jupiter, being a gas giant, we won't see crater impacts on it, but its moons should have lots and lots of craters if it is indeed older. And they don't know how, older than our solar system, and the moon Callisto fits that to a T. There's the moon Callisto. Callisto is one of Jupiter's moons, and it is the heaviest cratered object in the entire solar system. It fits Jupiter. It fits if Jupiter is one of the oldest planets. It has more craters than any other object in our entire solar system. So that moon actually fits their theory. But then there is Europa, which is another moon of Jupiter. Europa is the least cratered object in the entire solar system. So here we have two moons circling what they believe should be and could be the oldest planet by far in the entire solar system. One of the things, in fact, one of the main things that they use to determine the age is the cratering, all right? And one moon has the most, one moon has the least. That's Europa. And while the science world wants to use cratering to determine age, my point is cratering, it can't determine age. What does a lot of cratering really determine? What does it tell us? Okay. Yeah, that moon right there just happened to get in the path of a lot of asteroids, right? This one didn't. That's all it tells us. It doesn't tell us anything about age. You could have two cars. They could be the exact same year of car. They could even have the exact same mileage. But one car, the entire nose of it, all the paint is chipped. The windshield has lots of chips in it. Maybe right at the roof has lots of chips in it. The other doesn't. What does that tell you? Asteroid hit it. One car spent a lot of time on the highway, right? The other one didn't. My dad used to tell me, when you're shopping for a car, look at the brake pedal. If the brake pedal is worn down and smooth, that car has been, that's a lot of city miles on that car, all right? We can go into the hills and find a street sign, a speed limit sign. You can go into the hills. You can go on dirt roads, and they have speed limit signs. Got bullet holes all over it. Does that mean that sign is older than the one in the city that doesn't have any holes? No. Okay. So my point with cratering is it doesn't mean age at all, but they use it a lot. They use it a lot. In fact, when we get to geology, we're going to talk a little bit about why doesn't the Earth have that many craters? Okay, anyway, we'll talk about that. All right, we're done. We're going to talk about Io next week, though. That's where we'll pick it up. Io is another moon of Jupiter, and it's cool. It's really cool. All right. But any thoughts on Jupiter or Callisto or Europa? What do you want to know? Richard. I don't know. I don't even know what keeps the sun together. I don't know why the sun is lit either. I really don't know. I don't think they know either. I mean, just gravitational pull. And, it, you know, I haven't done enough. I haven't done enough study. I don't know, and I don't think the science world knows either, why didn't the sun just explode, you know, when it ignited? Why does it remain lit? Does anybody know? Okay, I don't know either, other than Colossians chapter 1. And that is the Lord sustains it all. That I can give you that answer, all right? But I don't know why Jupiter holds together. I don't know why the sun, being a huge ball of flaming gas, holds together. I don't know why all the gas just doesn't ignite at the same time. Tyler? Right. Yeah. And you know, the science world probably does have a decent answer for that. I don't know it. Yeah. Any other thoughts, Tyler?
I just wanted to throw this out there because I thought I remembered this, but maybe it's not right. So I thought back in 2015 when they had the satellite flyby go past each of these planets, when they were looking at it, they actually found out that Neptune and Uranus were actually not gas giants, but water giants or some sort of liquid giants.
Yeah. They did make some discoveries, but I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of that. Yeah. Okay. There are, I can't remember if it's Neptune or Uranus now has actual clouds. There are clouds. What the clouds are made of, we don't know. But Richard? Okay. Yeah. If they found, you're probably right. Yeah. If they find actual water on Mars, there's going to be a lot of money thrown at that for sure. All right. Anything else? Well, we will. I'll just show you a picture of Io. Isn't that cool? It's a pretty planet, or it's a pretty moon. All right, and then when we get to Saturn, there's some good stuff coming. Anyway, let's close in prayer. Father in heaven, thank you for tonight. I do thank you for the beauty of what you have created around us. And I want to thank you just for the way that you have allowed the human race to advance with technology so that we here tonight can see actual photographs, actual images of what you have created millions and millions and millions of miles away from us, and we can see the beauty of it and bring you glory for it. Lord, the heavens do declare your glory. And we thank you for the opportunity that we have in this generation to actually view it. So many before us didn't have that privilege. So we thank you for it tonight. In Jesus' name, amen.